This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Beautiful Redemption, a novel. Written by Jamie McGuire, performed by Megan Wolfe.
Chapter 1. Control was all that was real. I had learned from a young age that planning, calculation, and observation could avoid most unpleasant things. Unnecessary risk, disappointment, and most importantly, heartache. Planning to avoid the unpleasant, though, wasn't always easy. A fact that had become glaringly apparent in the dim lights of Cutter's Pub. The dozen or so neon signs hanging on the walls and the weak track lighting from the ceiling, highlighting the bottles of liquor behind the bar, were only slightly comforting. Everything else made it evident just how far I was from home. The reclaimed barn wood made up the walls, and the blonde pine smudged with black stain had been designed specifically to make the midtown space look like a hole-in-the-wall bar, but it was too clean. 100 years of smoke hadn't saturated the paint. The walls didn't whisper about Capone or Dillinger. I'd been sitting on the same stool for 2 hours since I'd quit unpacking the boxes in my new condo. For as long as I could stand, I'd put away my items that made up who I was. Exploring my new neighborhood was much more appealing, especially in the amazingly mild night air, even though it was the last day in February. I was experiencing my new independence with the added freedom of having no one at home who expected a report of my whereabouts. The seat cushion that I was keeping warm was covered in orange substitute leather, and after drinking a respectful percentage of my relocation incentive that the Federal Bureau of Investigation had so generously deposited into my account that afternoon, I was doing well to keep from falling off of it. The last of my fifth Manhattan of the evening slid from inside the fancy glass into my mouth, sizzling down my throat. The bourbon and sweet vermouth tasted like loneliness. That at least made me feel at home. Home, though, was thousands of miles away, and it felt even farther the longer I sat on one of the 12 stools lining the curved bar. I wasn't lost, though. I was a runaway. Stacks of boxes sat in my new fifth-floor condo, boxes that I had packed with enthusiasm, while my former fiancé, Jackson, stood and sulked in the corner of our tiny shared Chicago apartment. Moving on was key to climbing the ranks in the Bureau, and I had gotten very good at it in a small amount of time. Jackson had been unfazed when I first told him I was being transferred to San Diego. Even at the airport, right before I'd left, he'd promised that we could still make it work. Jackson wasn't good at letting go at all. He had threatened to love me forever. I dangled the cocktail glass in front of me with an expectant smile. The bartender helped me set it soundly on the wood, and then he poured another. The orange peel and cherry were in a slow dance somewhere between the surface and the bottom. Like me. "This is your last one, honey," he said, wiping the bar on each side of me. "Stop working so hard, I don't tip that well." "The feds never do," he said, without judgment.
"Is it that obvious?" I said.
"A lot of you live around here. You all talk the same and get drunk the first night away from home. Don't worry, you don't scream, Bureau."
"Thank God for that," I said, holding up my glass. I didn't mean it. I loved the Bureau and everything about it. I'd even loved Jackson, who was an agent, too.
"Where did you transfer from?" he asked. His too tight black V-neck, manicured cuticles, and perfectly gelled coif betrayed his flirtatious smile.
"Chicago," I said.
His lips pulled back and puckered until he somewhat resembled a fish, and his eyes widened.
"You should be celebrating."
"I guess I shouldn't be upset unless I run out of places to run to." I took a gulp and licked the smoky burn of bourbon from my lips.
"Oh, getting away from your ex?"
"In my line of work, you never really get away."
"Oh, hell. He's a fed, too? Don't shit where you sleep, sweetie."
I traced the rim of my glass.
"They don't actually train you for that."
"I know, it happens a lot. See it all the time," he said, shaking his head,
while he washed something in a suds-filled sink behind the bar. You live close? I eyed him, wary of anyone who could sniff out an agent and asked too many questions. Will you be frequenting here? He clarified. Seeing where he was going with his inquisition, I nodded. Likely. Don't worry about the tip. Moving is expensive, and so is drinking away what you left behind. You can make it up to me later. His words made my lips curve up in a way they hadn't in months, even though it probably wasn't noticeable to anyone but me. What's your name? I asked. Anthony. Does anyone call you Tony? Not if they want a drink here. Noted. Anthony tended to the only other patron at the bar on this late Monday night, or some might call it an early Tuesday morning. The pudgy, middle-aged woman with swollen red eyes wore a black dress. As he did so, the door swung open, and a man around my age breezed in, sitting two stools down. He loosened his tie and unfastened the top button of his perfectly pressed white Oxford. He glanced in my direction, and in that half-second, his hazel-green eyes registered everything about me he wanted to know. Then he looked away. My cell phone buzzed in my blazer pocket, and I pulled it out to check the display. It was another text message from Jackson. Beside his name, a small 6 fit snugly between parentheses, noting the number of messages he'd sent. That trapped number reminded me of the last time he'd touched me. During a hug I'd had to coax him out of. I was 2,150 miles from Jackson, and he was still able to make me feel guilty. But not guilty enough. I clicked the side button on my cell phone, darkening the screen, without replying to Jackson's message. Then I lifted my finger to the bartender while gulping down the remainder of my 6th glass. I'd found Cutter's Pub, right around the corner from my new condo in Midtown, an area in San Diego nestled between the international airport and the zoo. My Chicago colleagues were wearing FBI-standard parkas over their bulletproof vests, while I was enjoying the warmer-than-usual San Diego weather in a tube top and blazer with skinny jeans. I felt a little overdressed and a tad sweaty. Granted, that could be from the amount of liquor in my system. You're awfully little to be in a place like this, the man two stools down said. A place like what? Anthony said, raising a brow while practically fisting a tumbler. The man ignored him. I'm not little, I said, before taking a drink. I'm petite. Isn't that the same thing? I also have a taser in my purse and a mean left hook, so don't bite off more than you can chew. Your kung fu is strong. I didn't give the man the gratification of attention. Instead, I stared forward. Was that a racist remark? Absolutely not. You just seem a little violent to me. I'm not violent, I said, although it was preferable to coming off as a vapid, easy target. Oh, really? He wasn't asking. He was antagonizing. I just recently read about female Asian peace leaders being honored. I'm guessing you weren't one of them. I'm also Irish, I grumbled. He chuckled once. There was something in his voice, not just ego, but more than confidence. Something made me want to turn and get a good look at him, but I kept my eyes on the line of liquor bottles on the other side of the bar. After the man realized he wasn't going to get a better response, he moved to the empty stool next to me. I sighed. "What are you drinking?" he asked. I rolled my eyes and then decided to look over at him. He was as beautiful as the Southern California weather, and he couldn't have looked less like Jackson. Even sitting down, I could tell that he was tall, at least 6'3". His pear-colored eyes glowed against his beach-bronzed skin. Although he might be intimidating to the average male, I didn't get the sense that he was dangerous, at least not to me, even if he was twice my size. "Whatever I'm buying," I said, not trying to hide my best flirtatious smile. Letting my guard down for a beautiful stranger for an hour was justifiable, especially after a 6th glass. We would flirt, I would forget about any residual guilt, and I would go home. I'd possibly even get a free drink. That was a respectable plan. He grinned back.
Anthony, he said, holding up a finger.
The usual? Anthony asked from the end of the bar. The man nodded. He was a regular. He must live or work close by. I frowned when Anthony took my glass instead of refilling it. He shrugged, no apology in his eyes.
Told you it was your last one.
In half a dozen pulls, the stranger knocked back enough cheap beer to be at least close to my level of intoxication. I was glad. I wouldn't have to pretend to be sober, and his drink of choice told me he wasn't fussy or trying to impress me. Or maybe he was just broke.
Did you say I couldn't buy you a drink because Anthony capped you or because you really wouldn't let me?
He asked.
Because I can buy my own drinks, I said,
albeit a bit slurred.
Do you live around here? He asked.
I peeked over at him.
Your stunted conversational skills are disappointing me by the second.
He laughed out loud, throwing his head back.
Christ, woman, where are you from? Not here.
Chicago. Just blew in. Boxes are still stacked in my living room.
I can relate, he said,
nodding in understanding while holding up his drink with respect.
I've made 2 cross-country moves in the last 3 years.
To where?
Here. Then D.C. Then back.
Are you a politician or a lobbyist? I asked with a smirk.
Neither, he said,
his expression twisting into disgust. He took a swig of his beer.
What's your name? He asked.
Not interested.
That's a terrible name.
I made a face. He continued.
That explains the move. You're running from a guy.
I glared at him. He was beautiful, but he was also presumptuous, even if he was right.
And not looking for another one, not a one-night stand, not a revenge screw, nothing.
So don't waste your time or your money. I'm sure you can find a nice West Coast girl who would be more than happy to accept a drink from you.
Where's the fun in that? He said,
leaning in. My God, even if I were sober, he would be intoxicating. I looked down at the way his lips touched the rim of his beer bottle, and I felt a twinge between my thighs. I was lying, and he knew it.
Did I piss you off? He asked,
with the most charming smile I'd ever seen. Clean-shaven, with just a couple of inches of light brown hair, that man and his smile had conquered far more daunting challenges than me.
Are you trying to piss me off? I asked. Maybe. The way you hold your mouth when you're angry is pretty fucking amazing. I might be a dick to you all night just so I can stare at your lips.
I swallowed. My little game was over. He'd won, and he knew it.
You want to get out of here? He asked.
I signaled to Anthony, but the stranger shook his head and put a large bill on the counter.
Free drink. At least that part of my plan had worked out.
The man walked over to the door, gesturing for me to lead the way.
A week's worth of tips says he doesn't go through with it,
Anthony said, loud enough for the beautiful stranger to hear.
To hell with it, I said, walking quickly through the door.
I passed my new friend and walked out onto the sidewalk, the door sweeping slowly closed. He grabbed my hand, playful but firm, and pulled me against him. Anthony seems to think you'll back out, I said, looking up at him. He was so much taller than me. Standing that close to him felt like sitting in the front row at the movie theater. I had to lift my chin and lean back a bit to look him in the eyes. I leaned in, daring him to kiss me. He hesitated while he scanned my face, and then his eyes softened.
Something tells me this time I won't.
He leaned down, and what began as an almost experimental soft kiss turned both lustful and romantic. His lips moved with mine as if he'd remembered them, even missed the way they'd felt. Unlike anything I'd experienced before, a strange electrical current crackled through me, melting my nerves away. We had done this so many times before, in a fantasy or maybe a dream. It was the best kind of déjà vu. For less than a second after he pulled away, his eyes were still closed as if he were savoring the moment.
When he looked down at me, he shook his head. Definitely not backing out. We rounded the corner, walked quickly across the street, and then went up the stoop of my building. I fished inside of my purse for my keys, and then we walked inside, waiting in the elevator bay. His fingers grazed mine, and once they intertwined, he yanked me against him. The elevator opened, and we stumbled inside. He gripped my hips and pulled me against him as my fingertips searched for the correct button. He touched his silken lips to my neck, and every nerve sparked and danced under my skin. The tiny kisses he peppered along my jawline, from ear to collarbone, were purposeful and experienced. His hands begged me to be closer to him with each touch, as if he'd been waiting for me his entire life. Even though I had that same irrational feeling, I knew it was all part of the appeal, a part of the ruse. But the way he noticeably restrained himself from tugging too hard at my clothes made tiny shock waves careen through my body. When we reached the fifth floor, he had my hair pulled to the side and one shoulder exposed while he skimmed his lips over my skin. "You are so soft," he whispered. Ironically, his words made thousands of tiny bumps rise all over my skin. My keys jingled while I fumbled with the lock. The man twisted the knob, and we nearly fell inside. He leaned away from me, pushing the door closed with his back, and pulled me against him by my hands. He smelled like beer and a hint of saffron and wood from his cologne. But his mouth still tasted of mint toothpaste. When our mouths met again, I willingly let his tongue slip inside as I laced my fingers behind his neck. He slid my blazer off my shoulders and let it fall to the floor. Then he loosened his tie and pulled it over his head. As he unbuttoned his shirt, I pulled my tube top up and over my head. My bare breasts were exposed for only a moment before my long black hair cascaded back down to cover them. The stranger's shirt was off. His torso, a combination of impressive jeans and several years of an intensive daily workout regimen that had sculpted the perfection in front of me. I kicked off my heels, and he did the same with his shoes. I ran my fingers over each of his protruding muscles and the ripples of his abdomen. One hand settled on the button of his pants, while the other gripped the thick hardness under them. Holy giant cock. The sharp sound of his zipper made the warmth between my legs throb, practically begging to be caressed. I pressed my fingers into the backs of his arms while his kisses left my neck for my shoulders and then my chest. All the while, he slowly slipped off my jeans. He stood and paused for a few seconds, taking a moment to appreciate that I was standing completely naked before him. He also seemed a bit surprised. "No panties?" I shrugged. "Never." "Never?" he asked, his eyes begging me to say no. I loved the way he was looking at me, part amazed, part amused, part overwhelmingly aroused. My girlfriends in Chicago had always lauded the benefits of the strings-free one-night stand. This guy seemed like the perfect one to try it with. I arched an eyebrow, relishing how sexy this total stranger made me feel. "Don't own a single pair." He lifted me up, and I hooked my ankles around his backside. The only fabric still left between us was his dark gray boxer briefs. He kissed me as he carried me to the couch, and then he gently laid me onto the cushions. "Comfortable?" he asked, nearly breathing the words. When I nodded, he kissed me once, and then left quickly to fish a square package from his wallet. When he returned, he ripped it open with his teeth. I was glad he'd brought his own. Even if I had thought to purchase condoms, I wouldn't have had the foresight or optimism to buy any in his size. He quickly unrolled the thin latex over his length and then touched his tip to the delicate pink skin between my legs. He leaned down to whisper in my ear, but he only let out a faltering breath. I reached around to his tight backside and pressed my fingers into his skin, guiding him as he slid himself inside me. It was my turn to let out a sigh. He groaned and then put his mouth on mine again. After 10 minutes of maneuvering on the couch, sweaty and red-faced, the stranger looked at me with a frustrated and apologetic smile. "Where's your bedroom?" I pointed to the hallway. "Second door on the right." He lifted me, holding my thighs, and I tightened them around his middle. He padded down the hall in his bare feet, passing boxes and plastic bags along with stacks of plates and linens. I wasn't sure how he kept from tripping in the dim light of an unfamiliar condo with his mouth on mine. As he walked, while still inside me, I couldn't help but cry out the only name I could. "Jesus Christ." He smiled against my mouth and pushed open the door before lowering me to my mattress. He didn't take his eyes from mine as he positioned himself over me. His knees were a little wider apart than they had been while we were on the couch, allowing him to go deeper and to move his hips so that he touched me in a spot that made my knees quiver with each thrust. His mouth was on mine again as if the weight had been killing him. If I hadn't just met him half an hour before, I would have mistaken the way he touched me, kissed me, moved against me, for love. He touched his cheek to mine and held his breath as he concentrated, building up to an end. At the same time, he was trying to prolong the senseless, foolish, and irresponsible but amazing ride we were both on. He pushed against the mattress with one hand and held my knee against his shoulder with the other. I white-knuckled the comforter as he thrust himself inside me, over and over. Jackson hadn't been unfortunate in size, but without a doubt, this stranger filled every inch of me. Every time he buried himself, it would send a rush of fantastic pain throughout my entire body. And every time he pulled back, I'd nearly panic, hoping it wasn't over. With my arms and legs wrapped around him, I cried out again for the dozenth time since he had climbed the stairs. His tongue was so forceful and commanding in my mouth that I knew he'd done this many, many times before. That made it easier. He didn't care enough to pass judgment on me later, so I wouldn't have to either. Once I'd seen what kind of body was under that button-down Oxford, I couldn't really blame myself, even if I were sober. He rocked into me again, his sweat mixing with mine, making our skin feel like we were melting together. My eyes nearly rolled back into my head with the devastating mixture of ache and pleasure surging through my body with every movement. His mouth returned to mine, and I was easily lost in thoughts of how eager, yet smooth and amazing his lips were. Every flick of his tongue was calculated, practiced, and seemed like it was all in pursuit of my pleasure. Jackson hadn't been a particularly good kisser, and even though I'd only just met this man above me, I would miss those longing kisses once he ducked out of my condo in the early hours of the morning, if he even waited that long. While he wonderfully and mercilessly fucked me, he gripped my thigh with one hand, spreading my legs further apart, and then he slid his other hand between my legs, tenderly rubbing his thumb in tiny circles over my swollen, sensitive pink skin. A few seconds later, I was crying out, raising my hips to meet his and then squeezing his waist with my trembling knees. He leaned down and covered my mouth with his while I moaned. I could feel his lips turn up into a smile. After a few slow movements and tender kisses, his restraint was gone. His muscles tensed as he thrust himself inside me, each time more powerful than the one before. With my climax impressively achieved, he concentrated only on himself as he thrust harder and ruthlessly against me. His groan was muffled inside my mouth, and then he pressed his cheek against mine while he rode the wave of his orgasm. Gradually, he lay still above me. He took a moment to catch his breath, and then he turned to kiss my cheek, his lips lingering for a while. Our encounter had gone from a spontaneous adventure to painfully awkward in less than a minute. The silence and stillness in the room made the alcohol disappear, and the reality of what we'd done weighed down on me. I'd gone from feeling sexy and desired to an embarrassingly eager, cheap score. The stranger leaned down to kiss my lips, but I lowered my chin, pulling back, which felt ridiculous since he was still engaged. I began. Have to be at work early. He kissed me anyway, ignoring my shamed expression. His tongue danced with mine, caressing it, memorizing it. He deeply breathed in through his nose, not at all in a hurry, and then he pulled back, smiling. Damn it, I would miss his mouth, and I suddenly felt really pathetic for that. I wasn't sure if I'd ever find someone who could kiss me that way.
Me too. I'm Thomas, by the way, he said softly.
He rolled over and relaxed beside me, his head propped by his hand. Instead of getting dressed, he looked as if he were ready for conversation. My independence was slipping away from me every second the stranger became something more. Thoughts of reporting my every move to Jackson flipped like television channels in my mind. I hadn't transferred thousands of miles away to be chained to another relationship. I pressed my lips together. I'm... Do it. Do it, or you'll just kick yourself later. Emotionally unavailable? Thomas nodded, stood up, and then walked into the living room to dress in silence. He stood in the doorway of my bedroom with his shoes in one hand, his keys in the other, his tie hanging askew from his neck. I tried not to stare, but I did, so I could study every inch of him, to remember and fantasize over for the rest of my life. He looked down and then chuckled, judgment still absent from his expression. Thanks for a great and unexpected end to a shitty Monday. He began to turn around. I pulled the blanket across me and sat up. It's not you. You were great. He turned back to face me, a smirk on his shadowed face.
Don't worry about me. I'm not walking out of here, doubting myself. You gave me fair warning. I wasn't expecting anything more.
If you wait a second, I'll walk you out.
I know the way. This is my building. I'm sure we'll run into each other again.
My cheeks paled. You live in this building? He peered up at the ceiling.
Just above you.
I pointed up. The next floor up, you mean?
Yes, but, he said with a sheepish grin, my place is right above yours. But I'm rarely home.
I swallowed, horrified.
So much for a strings-free one-night stand. I began nibbling at my thumbnail, trying to think of what to say next.
Okay, well, I guess good night then.
Thomas flashed an arrogant, seductive smile. Night.
Chapter 2. Drinking away Jackson's guilt trip the night before my first day in the San Diego field office proved not to be the most intelligent thing I'd done. I arrived with only my vest, and I was given a sidearm, credentials, and a cell phone once I'd checked in. Assigned to Squad 5, I found the only empty desk, vacated by the last agent who hadn't meshed with the infamous assistant special agent in charge, who we referred to as the ASAC. I had heard about him all the way in Chicago, but it would take more than a bad temper to scare me away from a chance at a promotion. Only a few sections of the desk's surface didn't have a light film of dust, probably from where his or her computer and belongings had been set. My headphones case sat next to my laptop, and a lack of picture frames or miscellaneous decor looked rather pathetic compared with the other desks in the squad room.
That's pathetic, a female voice said,
making me wonder if I'd spoken my thoughts aloud. A woman, young but slightly intimidating, stood with her arms crossed and resting on the ledge of the 4x5 fabric-covered wall that separated my cubicle from the main hallway that was used to get from one end of the squad room to the other. Her shiny but otherwise ordinary brown hair was pulled into a low bun at the nape of her neck. "I can't disagree," I said, wiping the dust away with a paper towel. I had already put my vest in my locker. It was the only thing I had brought from the Chicago office. I had moved to San Diego to start over, so it didn't make much sense to put my old life on display.
I don't mean the dust, she said,
watching me with her hooded green eyes. Her cheeks were a bit chubby, but that only gave away her youth. She was certainly fit everywhere else.
I know. I'm Val Tabor. Don't call me Agent Tabor or we can't be friends.
Shall I call you Val, then?
She made a face.
What else would you call me?
Agent Tabor, a tall, slender man said as he walked by. He smirked as if he knew what would follow.
Fuck off,
she said, pulling a file from his hands. She glanced at it and then looked back to me.
You're the intelligence analyst? Lisa Lindy?
Lise, I said, cringing. I had never gotten used to correcting people. Like geese, but with an L.
Lise, sorry. I hear you got fast-tracked.
Her voice was laced with sarcasm.
I call bullshit, but it's not really any of my business.
She was right. Being a female federal agent who specialized in languages had all but rolled out the red carpet for my transfer. But I had been instructed not to mention my specialization to anyone unless I had approval from my supervisor. I looked over at the office of the supervisor. It was even more barren than my desk. Getting any approval from an empty office would prove to be difficult. You're correct, I said, not wanting to get into specifics. It was pure luck that Squad 5 had needed a language expert the moment I decided to leave Chicago. The stressed discretion meant there was likely an issue within the bureau, but assuming wouldn't have helped score a transfer, so I'd filled out my paperwork and packed my bags.
Great, she handed me the file. Title 3 for you to transcribe here. Maddox also wants an FD-302. The first email in your inbox should be from the welcome wagon, and the next should be an audio file from Maddox. I went ahead and brought you copies of the FD-302s and a CD until you get used to our system. He wants you to get started right away.
Thank you. Title 3s, known to Hollywood and the general public as phone or wiretaps, made up a large portion of my function at the Bureau. Recordings were created, and then I would listen, translate, and write a report, also known as the infamous FD-302. But the Title 3s typically given to me were in Italian, Spanish, or my mother's language, Japanese. If the recording were in English, the OST, the squad secretary, would transcribe it. Something told me that Val thought something was off about an analyst interpreting a Title 3, because curiosity, or maybe suspicion, was flickering in her eyes. But she didn't ask, and I didn't tell. As far as I knew, Maddox was the only agent who knew about my true purpose in San Diego. On it, I said. She winked at me and smiled.
Want me to show you around later? Anything you didn't get to during the orientation tour?
I thought about that for half a second. The fitness room?
I know that one. I frequent there after work. Right before I frequent the bar, she said.
Agent Tabor, a woman with a tight bun said as she walked by.
Fuck off, she said again.
I arched an eyebrow. She shrugged.
They must love it, or they wouldn't talk to me.
My mouth pulled to the side while I tried to suppress a laugh. Val Tabor was refreshing.
We have a squad meeting first thing in the AM.
She pondered that for a moment.
I'll show you the fitness room after lunch. It's sort of off-limits between 11 and noon. The boss likes to focus, she said, whispering the last bit and making a show of putting her fingers to one side of her mouth.
12:30, I said, with a nod.
My desk, Val said, pointing to the next cubicle over. We're neighbors.
What's with the stuffed bunny? I asked, referring to the gangly white rabbit with X's sewn on for eyes sitting on the corner of her desk. Her slight triangle of a nose wrinkled.
It was my birthday last week.
When I didn't reply, her face screwed into disgust.
Fuck off.
A grin slowly stretched across her face, and then she winked at me before rounding the corner to return to her desk. She sat in her chair and turned her back to me, opening her email on her laptop. I shook my head and then unzipped my headphones case before placing them over my ears. After connecting them to my laptop, I opened the unlabeled white binder and pulled a CD from a plastic sheath before slipping it into the drive. As the CD loaded, I clicked New Document. My pulse fluttered as my fingers curved over the keyboard, ready to type. There was something about a new project,
a blank page, that gave me a particular enjoyment that nothing else could. The file indicated the two voices speaking, their background, and why we'd sought a Title III in the first place. San Diego's Squad 5 was heavy in organized crime, and although it wasn't my preferred field of violent crime, it was close enough. When desperate to leave, any door would do. Two distinct, deep voices speaking Italian filled my ears, cupped by the headphones. I kept the volume low. Ironically, inside the government agency that had been founded to unveil secrets, the 4x4 cubicles weren't conducive to keeping them. I began to type. Translating and transcribing the conversation were only the first steps. Then, my favorite part came. It was what I had become well known for, and what would get me to Virginia. Analysis. Violent crime was what I loved, and the National Center for Analysis of Violent Crime in Quantico, Virginia, also known as NCAVC, was where I wanted to be. At first, the two men in the recording stroked each other's egos, talking about how much pussy they had each procured over the weekend. But the conversation quickly turned serious as they discussed a man who seemed to be their boss, Benny. I glanced at the file Val had given me while I typed, getting only a quick glimpse into how many points Benny had made in the mafia game while being a decent player in Las Vegas. I wondered how San Diego had stumbled onto this case, and I wondered who was doing the groundwork in Nevada. Chicago wouldn't have much luck whenever we had to make a call to that office. Whether gamblers, criminals, or law enforcement, Vegas kept everyone very busy. 7 pages later, my fingers were itching to start my report, but I went over the audio again to check for accuracy. This was my first assignment for San Diego, and I also had the added pressure of being known as an accomplished agent in this specific area. The report had to be impressive, at least in my own mind. Time had gotten away from me. It seemed like just half an hour had passed before Val was eyeing me over the short partition between our cubicles, this time tapping her nails on the ledge. She mouthed words I couldn't hear, so I pulled off my headphones. "You're not turning out to be a very good friend. Late for our first lunch date," she said. I couldn't tell if she was joking or not. I lost track of time. I'm sorry.
"Sorry doesn't put a greasy cheeseburger in my gut. Let's get moving."
I walked with her to the elevator, and Val pushed the button for the ground floor. Once in the parking garage, I followed her to her 2-door black Lexus and settled in while watching her push the start button. The seat and steering wheel adjusted to her specifications.
"Nice," I said. "You must get paid a lot more than I do." "It's used. I bought it from my brother. He's a cardiologist. Asshole."
I chuckled as she navigated out of the property. After passing the building next to the entrance gate, she waved to the guard, and then drove to the closest burger joint.
"Don't they have burgers at the office?"
Her face twisted into disgust.
"Yes, but Fuzzy's burgers are the best."
"Fuzzy burgers? That doesn't sound appetizing at all."
"Not Fuzzy burgers. Fuzzy's burgers."
"Trust me," she said, turning right. Then she made a left before jerking her wheel into the parking lot of a quaint burger joint with a homemade sign.
"Val!" a man called from behind the counter as soon as we'd walked in. "Val's here!" he yelled. "Val's here!" a woman echoed.
We barely made it to the counter when the man tossed a small round object wrapped in white paper to the woman in a pristine white apron standing at the register.
"BLT with cheese, mustard, and mayo," the woman said with a knowing smile.
Val turned to me.
"Disgusting, right?"
"I'll have the same," I said. We took our trays of food and found an empty table in the corner, near the window. I closed my eyes and let the sunshine pour down on me. It's weird that the weather is so beautiful and it's barely March.
"It's not weird. It's glorious. The temp has been higher than average for this time of year. But even when it's not, it's perfect. Everyone would be happier if the world had San Diego's weather."
Val dipped her golden curly fry into a small cup of ketchup.
"Try the fries. Dear God, try the fries. They are so good. I crave them at night sometimes when I'm alone, which is more often than you'd think."
"I don't think anything," I said, Dipping a fry into my own small cup, I popped it into my mouth. She was right. I quickly grabbed another. Speaking of, do you have a guy or a girl? I'm just asking. I shook my head. Did you? Have you ever? Kissed a girl? Val cackled. No! Have you been in a relationship? Why do you ask? Oh, it's complicated. I gotcha. It's not complicated at all, actually. Listen, Val said while chewing the first bite of her burger. I'm a great friend, but you're gonna have to open up more. I don't care to hang out with strangers. Everyone is a stranger at first, I said, thinking of my stranger. No, not in the bureau. Why don't you just open my file? That's no fun. Come on, just the basics. Did you transfer to move up or move on? Both. Perfect. Keep going. Do your parents suck? She covered her mouth. Oh, my hell, they're not dead, are they? I squirmed in my seat. No. I had a normal childhood. My parents love me and each other. I'm an only child. Val sighed. Thank Christ. I might as well ask the next offensive question. No, I wasn't adopted, I droned. Lindy is Irish. My mother is Japanese. Is your dad a ginger? She smirked. I glared at her. You only get two offensive questions on the first day. Continue, she conceded. I graduated with honors. I was dating a guy. It didn't work out, I said, tired of my own story. No drama. Our breakup was just as boring as our relationship. How long? Was I with Jackson? 7 years. 7 years? No ring? Kind of, I said, making a face. Ah, you're married to the job, Betty Bureau. So was he. Val puffed out a laugh. You were dating an agent? Yes, he was SWAT. Even worse. How did you live with him for that long? How did he handle coming in second place for that long? I shrugged. He loved me. But you gave back the ring. You didn't love him? I shrugged again, taking a bite. Anything I should know about the office? I asked. Val smirked. Changing the subject, classic. What you need to know about the office? Don't piss off Maddox. He's the assistant special agent in charge. So I've heard, I said, brushing my hands against each other to wipe off the salt. All the way in Chicago? I nodded. It's justifiable gossip. He is a huge, gigantic, enormous asshole. You'll see tomorrow morning at the meeting. He'll be there? I asked. She nodded. He will tell you that you're worthless as an agent, even if you're the best of the best, just so he can observe your performance when your confidence has been crushed. I can handle it. What else? Agent Sawyer is a slut. Stay away from him. And Agent Davies is, too. Stay away from her. Oh, I said, processing her words. I don't see myself engaging in interoffice relations after the debacle that was Jackson. Val smiled. I have first-hand knowledge of both, so you should stay away from me, too. I frowned. Is anyone here safe to hang out with? Maddox, she said. He has mommy issues, and he was burned bad a while ago. He wouldn't look at your tits if you flashed him. So he hates women? No, she said, looking off in thought. He's just sworn them off. Doesn't want to get hurt again, I imagine. I don't care what is wrong with him. If what you say is true, I definitely don't want to hang out with him. You'll do fine. Just do your job and go on with your life. The job is my life, I said. Val lifted her chin, not trying to hide that she was impressed with my answer. You're already one of us. Maddox is a hard ass, but he'll see it too. What's his story? I asked. She took a sip of water. He was focused, but tolerable, when I came to San Diego until a little over a year ago. Like I said, he was burned by some girl in his hometown. Camille. She said the name as if it were poison in her mouth. I don't know the details. No one talks about it. Weird. Will you feel like having a drink or five later? She asked, losing interest now that the conversation wasn't centered on my personal life. There's a cool little pub in Midtown. I live in Midtown, I said,
wondering if I would see my neighbor again. She grinned.
Me too. A lot of us do. We can drown your sorrows together.
I don't have sorrows, just memories. They'll go away on their own.
Val's eyes were bright again with interest, but I wasn't enjoying the interrogation. I wasn't that hard up for friends. Well, I was, but I had boundaries.
What about you? I asked.
That is a Friday night conversation told over stiff drinks and loud music. So are you here to swear off men? Are you finding yourself?
She asked the questions without an ounce of seriousness. If my answers were yes, I wouldn't admit it. She was clearly hoping to ridicule me. If I were, I have already failed miserably, I said, thinking of the night before.
Val leaned forward. Are you serious? You just got here. Someone you know? Old high school classmate?
I shook my head, feeling my cheeks flush. The memories came quickly but in flashes. Thomas's hazel-green eyes glancing over at me from where he'd sat at the bar. The sound of my door from him pushing back against it. How easily he'd slid inside me, and my ankles high in the air, jerking with each amazing thrust. I pressed my knees together in reaction. A wide grin spread across Val's face.
One night stand?
Not that it's any of your business, but... yes.
Complete stranger?
I nodded. Sort of. He lives in my building, but I didn't know that until after. Val gasped and then sat back against her wooden chair.
I knew it, she said.
You knew what? She leaned forward and crossed her arms, resting them on the table.
That we are going to be great friends.
Chapter 3.
Who the hell is Lisa?
A loud voice bounced off the four walls of the squad room.
Lisa Lindy.
On just my second day in the San Diego office, I was one of dozens of agents waiting for the early meeting to begin. Everyone had seemed nervous before the outburst, but now they all seemed to relax. I looked up into the eyes of the young assistant special agent in charge and nearly swallowed my tongue. It was him. My one-night stand. The lips I missed. My neighbor. Panic and bile instantly rose in my throat, but I swallowed it back.
It's Lise, Val said. Like geese, but with an L, sir.
My heart was pounding against my chest. He was waiting for someone to come forward. Life was going to go from fresh start to complicated in 3, 2... I'm Lise Lindy, sir. Is there a problem? When our eyes met, he paused, and utter horror washed over me in waves. Recognition lit his face, too, and for just a moment, he blanched. The strings-free one-night stand was now so tangled that I wanted to hang myself. He quickly recovered. Whatever had made him so angry melted away for a moment, but then his face tightened, and he was back to hating everything. Special Agent Maddox's ferocious reputation had preceded him. Agents from all over the country knew of his tight rein and impossible expectations. I had been prepared to suffer under his supervision. I hadn't been prepared to do so after actually being under him. Damn it. Damn it. Damn it. He blinked and then held out the file.
This FD-302 is unacceptable. I don't know how you did things in Chicago, but in San Diego, we don't just slap shit on paper and call it good.
His harsh and very public criticism made me snap out of my shame spiral and back into the role of Betty Bureau. The report is thorough, I said, with confidence. Despite my anger, my mind toyed with the memories of the night before. What my boss's body had looked like under that suit. The way his biceps had flexed when he rammed himself inside me. How good his lips had felt on mine. The severity of the shitstorm I had created for myself hit me. I had no idea how I could form a sentence, much less sound confident.
Sir, Val began,
I would be happy to take a look at the report and...
Agent Tabor, Maddox said. I half expected her to say, fuck off.
Yes, sir. I am perfectly capable of discerning whether I'll accept a report or not.
Yes, sir, she said again, unfazed, lacing her fingers on the table.
Are you able to perform the job assigned to you, Agent Lindy? Maddox asked.
I didn't like the way he'd said my name as if it left a bad taste in his mouth.
Yes, sir.
It felt so damn bizarre to call him sir. It made me feel too submissive. My father's blood raged in my veins.
Then do it.
I wanted to be in San Diego, even if it put me directly in the crosshairs of a renowned asshole of an ASAC like Maddox. It was better than being in Chicago, having the same 7-year-long conversation with Jackson Schultz. That name definitely left a bad taste in my mouth. Still, I couldn't stop myself from what I was about to say.
I would be happy to, sir, if you'll let me.
I was sure I heard maybe one or two barely audible gasps in the room. Agent Maddox's eyes flickered. He took a step in my direction. He was tall and nothing less than menacing, even in a tailored suit. Even though he was more than a foot taller than me and rumored to be lethal with a gun and his fists, my Irish side lured me to narrow my eyes and cock my head, daring my superior to take one more step, even on my first day.
Sir, another agent said, requesting Maddox's attention. Maddox turned, allowing the man to whisper in his ear. Val leaned over, talking so quiet she nearly breathed the words.
That's Marks. He's closest to Maddox here.
Maddox had to lean down, as Marks was not much taller than me, but he was broad-shouldered and appeared almost as dangerous as the ASAC. Maddox nodded, and then his cold hazel eyes skimmed over everyone in the room.
We've had a few leads with Abernathy. Marks will meet with the contact agent in Vegas tonight. Tabor, where are we with Benny's guy Arturo?
Val began to give her report just as Maddox tossed my FD-302 on the table. He let her finish, and then he glared down at me.
Send me something when you have some actual intelligence. I brought you on board based on Carter's commendation. Don't make an ass out of him.
Agent Carter doesn't extend his praises lightly, I said, unamused. I take that very seriously.
Maddox raised an eyebrow, waiting.
Sir, I take his commendation very seriously, sir.
Then give me something I can use by the end of the day.
Yes, sir, I said, through my teeth.
Everyone stood and dispersed, and I snatched my report off the table, glaring at Maddox as he left with Agent Marks trailing behind. Someone handed me a styrofoam cup full of water, and I took it before plodding to my desk and falling less than gracefully into my chair.
Thank you, Agent Tabor.
Fuck off, she said.
And you're toast. He hates your guts.
The feeling is mutual, I said, before taking another sip. This is just a pit stop. My end game is to become an analyst at Quantico.
Val pulled back her long russet tresses, twisting and wrapping them into a low bun at the base of her neck. My sad, thin black hair was teeming with jealousy as Val struggled with 4 bobby pins to keep the sheer weight of her hair from pulling the bun out of place. Her side-swept bangs were pulled across her forehead and tucked behind her left ear. Val appeared young, but she didn't seem inexperienced. The day before, she'd mentioned several closed cases that she had under her belt already.
I said San Diego was temporary, too, and here I am, 4 years later.
She followed me to the wall with the built-in coffee nook and Keurig. Squad 5 was back to the grind, typing on their computers or talking on the phone. When my mug was full, I grabbed packets of sugar and creamer and then returned to my high-backed black chair. I tried not to compare everything with my cubicle in Chicago, but San Diego had had new offices built just 2 years before. In certain areas, I could still smell the fresh paint. Chicago was well-worn. It had been home for 6.5 years before I'd transferred. My chair there was practically molded to my backside, the files in my desk organized just the way I wanted. The cubicle walls between agents were tall enough for at least a little privacy, and the ASAC hadn't ripped me to shreds in front of the entire squad on my second day. Val watched me set the steaming mug on my desk and then sat in her chair. I fingered the package of creamer, frowning. "I'm out of half and half, but I do have 2% in the refrigerator," she said, a tinge of sympathy in her voice. I made a face. "No, I hate milk." Val's eyebrows shot up, and then her eyes fell to the floor, surprised at my tone.
"Okay, then, you're not a fan of milk. Won't ask again."
"No, I hate milk. As in, my soul hates milk." Val chuckled.
"Well, then, I won't make the trip."
She eyed my empty desk, devoid of family pictures or even a pen holder. "The guy who used to be at this cubicle, his name was Trex."
"Trex?" I asked.
"Scotty Trexler.
God, he was cute.
He transferred out, too. All the way out. I think he's with a different agency now." She sighed, her eyes seeing something I couldn't.
"I liked him."
"I'm sorry," I said, not sure what else to say. She shrugged.
"I've learned not to get attached around here. Maddox runs a tight ship, and not a lot of agents can take it."
"He doesn't scare me," I said.
"I won't tell him you said that, or he really won't stay off your tail."
I felt my face get hot, enough that Val noticed, and she narrowed her eyes.
"You're blushing."
"No, I'm not."
"And now you're lying."
"It's the coffee." Val stared deep into my eyes.
"You haven't even taken a sip."
"Something I said embarrassed you. Maddox. Tail." I shifted under her intense stare.
"You live in Midtown?"
"No," I said, shaking my head.
I wasn't denying my residence, but what I knew she would soon discover.
Damn having friends who are federal investigators for a living.
"Maddox is your neighbor, isn't he?"
I shook my head, faster, looking around. "Val, no. Stop."
"Fuckity. You're joking. Maddox is your one-night stand?" she hissed, thankfully keeping her voice to a whisper.
I covered my face and then let my forehead fall to my desk. I could hear her leaning over the cubicle.
"Oh my God, Lise. Did you just die when you saw him? How could you not know? How did he not know? He hired you, for Christ's sake."
"I don't know," I said, rocking my head from side to side, my fingers digging into the edge of my desk. I sat up, pulling down the thin skin beneath my eyelids as I did so. "I'm fucked, aren't I?"
"At least once that I know of," Val stood, her badge wagging as she did so.
She smirked at me, sliding her slender long fingers into her pockets. I looked up at her, desperate. "Just kill me now. Put me out of my misery. You have a gun. You can do it."
"Why would I do that? This is the best thing to happen to this squad in years. Maddox got laid."
"You're not going to tell anyone, right? Promise me." Val grimaced. "We're friends. I wouldn't do that." "That's right. We're friends." She craned her neck toward me.
"Why are you talking to me like I'm a mental patient?"
I blinked and shook my head. "I'm sorry. I'm quite possibly having the worst day of my life."
"Well, you look hot."
She walked away. "Thanks," I said to myself as I scanned the room. No one had heard our discussion, but it still felt like the secret was out. I sank back into my chair and slipped on my headphones as Val left the squad room for the security doors leading into the hallway. I covered my mouth for a moment and sighed, feeling lost. How had I messed up my fresh start so thoroughly, and before it even started? Not only had I screwed my boss, but if the other agents also found out, it could jeopardize any chances I would have at promotions while under Maddox's supervision. If he had any integrity at all, he would continually pass me over in fear that the truth would come out. A promotion would look bad for both of us. Not that it mattered. Maddox had made a point to let everyone know that he wasn't impressed with my work. A report that I had given 100%, and my best was damn good. I looked over my transcript and shook my head. The translation was spot on. The report was comprehensive. I hovered the mouse over the right-facing arrow and clicked it, playing the audio again.
The longer the two Italian men's voices bantered about a job and the hooker one of them had relations with the night before, the more my cheeks reddened with anger.